Ladies and gentlemen, it wouldn't be Christmas without this man who is back where he rightfully deserves to be. The dark cloud has been lifted, thank goodness. It is Sir Cliff Richard. Hello.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
It's been too long, young man.
I know. It always feels like it's just yesterday, though.
It does with me too. But I can't take you serious as Sir Cliff Richard when I see you on a motorbike looking very, very trendy and very hip.
Well, you know, I've never actually ridden a motorbike. It was a great image, and I took a shot from one of the calendars, actually, and I thought, that's a great image. And, of course, the Sony Records have loved it. So we've used that image, actually. It's a good image, because rock and roll was about biking and about fabulous sporty cars like the Chevy Corvettes and the Mustangs and all of that. So it's just trying to keep in touch and keep people in touch with that old iconic period of rock and roll.
Do you know what's amazing, Cliff? I sit here in the tower in Liverpool, and you've played Liverpool many times. What I love is I look down, I'm looking at it now, Matthew Street with the Cavern. Those days when you were the raw Cliff Richard, and I'm a fan. I don't have to tell you, you know that, I always have been. But you look at that and you see where you are today, and there's not many of them left that are still hitting records all over the world and producing.
I know, it's a funny thing, isn't it? I got a feeling, when I listen to some of the new guys and gals singing, I'm thinking to myself, these kids, I say kids, I mean, they're in their early 20s and things, but these new young singers are so darn good. It amazes me, and I personally believe that any one of them could or should be around 50 years from now. But I don't know if they have that particular ambition. Maybe they just want to make it and get out, and there's nothing wrong with that. And also the other thing, you know, Peter, my first record did not make number one. My second one didn't either, nor did my third, and nor did my fourth. In fact, there was a downward trend, and all the time, my manager and producer, Norrie Paramore, said, "Don't panic, we'll find the right song." And sure enough, Living Doll came, then Traveling Light, then Summer Holiday and The Young Ones, The Bachelor Boy, and all these big number ones. And nowadays, I always feel that sometimes the record companies are a little unfair on the younger singers, because if they don't, you know, if they have a number one and then they have a number two, it's almost considered a failure.
Yeah. The other thing is, it's not about, and I keep telling people this, I'm delighted to say that we know each other, and it's not about the money. You actually enjoy an audience and bring in happiness.
I do, actually. I think my favourite part of our business is recording. Because when you think about it, that's where all the creative stuff starts. You get into the studio, you know, as I did in the good old days, go in there with a bunch of new songs, sit down with the producer, he'll talk to the musicians, we'd all give hints as to how we'd like it to be, and then suddenly there was Devil Woman. And so you create it, and then of course you go on stage, and that's another magic thing about how to present it so people believe they're listening to the record. Because, you know, in a way, when you do things live, it can never, ever sound like the record, because the record is perfect conditions. No extraneous noises, no audience coughing in the background, and it's perfect. But nevertheless, if you can make them feel that they're listening to the recording of We Don't Talk Anymore or Devil Woman or Living Doll, I mean, to me, that's a huge challenge. And, of course, massive success, in fact. And I have received letters saying, "Oh, you sound just like the record." And I smile to myself and say, "No, I don't. But if you think so, that's good."
Tell us about the Christmas single, It's Better to Dream.
Yeah, it's the only track on the album. Peter, this is the only track that is a new song. All the others are all iconic rock and roll songs, you know, the Chuck Berry stuff, the Little Richard, the Bobby Darin, the Elvis Presley. That were all those original from the 50s, early 60s. And Better to Dream, in fact, the first rock and roll album I did, the record company said, put a new one on there. So we did. And now we thought we'd keep the pattern going, so we put a new one on. And the interesting thing is both the record company and also radio stations have enjoyed Better to Dream. And many times I've played my album to friends, and they've picked that one out. Yeah, they love the rock and roll, but they say, "Oh, what's that one? Play that one again." And I don't know if you know, but there's also a Christmas version of it now.
I've got it in front of me. No, I've got the single. I've got it here. That's the one I'm looking at with the stars on the. It's lovely.
Oh, good. Did the record company give it to you?
It's a Christmas mix. Yes, I wouldn't buy them yet. I'm not at that age yet.
No, I'm really asking because I was told that they're really only available on the internet.
Ah, right. Well, I've got one in front of me. It's Better to Dream, the Christmas mix.
I wouldn't know where to start. You put the name in and if you know the title of the song, and then something will come up. It's a Christmas version because the record company said, why doesn't that have a make it Christmassy? So I got to I wrote some lyrics with the two guys who wrote the original and changed it. Not terribly, in that it's still a story about a guy who should be with his girl at Christmas, but they're not anymore. Yeah. And rather than delete her, he continues to dream about her. So that's the effect that Christmas has. And of course, we changed it. We took off the lead guitar. We put on some special keyboard sounds. And I'm very happy with it, I have to say.
Good. Now, you mentioned about downloading. One of the newspapers picked up on the fact that a lot of your fans maybe don't know how to download. So it is a bit difficult, isn't it?
It is, actually. Trying to compete again with the new guys, they're all on the internet all the time. They're thrashing around all the time, and everybody knows how to do it. My question is, if I want to get onto the internet and sell material on the internet, how do you let people know? At the moment, of course, people like you are playing the tracks. Hmm. And I guess you could say to people, oh, you know, if you like this, it's available on the internet. You've just got to pump in Cliff Richard and it'll come up. But in the past, I've often thought, how do you actually tell people that someone like me actually has a record out? I mean, when I did the Solicious album some years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, somebody came to me and said, are you still recording? And I said, my album's number 5. In the charts, and it's not their fault. It's not their fault, but nobody tells them anything anymore.
Now it is a difficult one, and you know that vinyl is making a little bit of a resurgence within the dance music world.
Well, I mean, I've always liked playing vinyl, but of course, like most people, as the years have gone by, I got rid of all my vinyl record players. But here's the trick, though, you know, Peter. I've got a terrific engineer. He's engineered and mastered most of my music over the last 15, 20 years, or more maybe. And I said to him, I've got these vinyl things, and I'd like to keep them. He said, listen, whenever you want to keep an album, so what I do is I pick about 12 albums of my collection of about 500 I've got somewhere, and I send them to him. He cleans the vinyl up, and then he puts it onto a CD for me. Now, the CD is a perfect, it actually sucks sound onto itself, and what it takes is exactly what you put in. So that effect that vinyl has, the groove and the needle and everything like that, there's something exciting about listening to it that way. All of that goes onto your CD, and then therefore you can play a CD, and it's like playing the old vinyl.
Fabulous. Now, your tour next year, which is in June and July, I'm a bit perplexed. You're going to posh castles and homes.
Well, do you know, I think I belong in a home.
Stop it!
I don't, you know, funny enough, I don't actually choose the venues I go to. Usually a promoter will come and say they've got an idea for a tour. And in actual fact, this appeals to me because it's going to be in June, so you get the beginning of summer, got a chance of good weather. Every venue is an open-air venue.
Yeah.
And normally in an open-air venue, you don't get a lot of seating facility, but I believe they said they've got seats and everything people can come and sit on. And just have to pray for good weather. And a lot of the places, I didn't even know that Lincoln had a castle, but it has. So, yeah, forgive me for that. Has Liverpool got a castle?
You're not coming to Liverpool?
No, I know I'm not. Maybe because you don't have a castle.
Oh, thanks. Well, we've got one in Wales. We've got Bodden Whittle Castle, which is beautiful. But I'll leave it there. Don't worry about that. That's all right. It's going to be a great tour. The nearest one to us is Leeds. That's it.
That's miles away from Liverpool, though, isn't it?
It is indeed. It is indeed. But
oh, well, all I can say, I'm really sorry, though, because, I mean, funnily enough, when I think back to my early touring days, Liverpool was on the map on our very first tour when I worked with the Kaelin twins.
Yeah.
And there's been the Shadows and I had a kind of love affair with a lot of cities, and Liverpool was one of them. Whenever we came there, we had the most phenomenal response from people. And in the end, you judge a country or a city by the way you're received there. And Liverpool seems to me has always been a musical city anyway. You know, of course, it was inevitable the Beatles would come from there because of that. But they welcomed others as well, like me and the Shads.
But they loved you. And we've always loved you.
I just hope I get back at some point.
Cliff, I've kept away from the dreadful, dreadful times you've come through, which I felt every moment for you. But I've got to ask one question, which relates to it in a way. I lost, sadly, my religion. And I've heard several interviews you've done where you haven't lost your religion, although you've been to hell and back, and you really have. How can I find it again? What is your secret?
Well, Peter, I'm not sure it's a secret. It's just that what I keep saying to myself now, I'm never quite sure how people can be atheists, for instance, because if anything happens in their lives, who do they turn to? They can't always turn to a human being, and even then a human being can't be with you when you say goodnight to everybody and go off to your bed on your own. I found that I was constantly talking to God. I relied on being able to lie there at night when I couldn't sleep. That 22 months and 2 days, I probably got an average of about 2.5-3 hours sleep a night. But I'd wake up a lot, and I would find myself talking, and I would be able to talk my way through things and feel comforted by somebody. It's so strange, you know. God is such a strange thing to talk about. There's nothing you can put your finger on. There's no body that you can show a photograph of. It's just, you just know that there's somebody greater than us. And one of the things that's helped me to keep my faith is that whenever I look out into a vineyard like mine, I think to myself, if there's no God, all this wonderment before us, every different tree, every different vegetable, every different animal is all an accident. The whole thing is an accident. Peter, you and me talking now is one huge accident if there's not a creator involved. And I find myself constantly believing more and more because of that fact. I mean, I don't know whether that would help you, but really, really, if you push God out of your life, then you have to be prepared to deal with things on your own.
Interesting. Thank you for that. I love the point that you made about everything being here and just not taking it for granted. And I'll ponder on that. I've got to tell you, because you've had such a bad time, and I don't know if you've been told about this, which is rather lovely. As you know, when you are doing this amazing tour, you won't, sadly, anymore be interrupted by Cilla Black.
No, I mean, it's so difficult. Even now, the other day, I said, oh, Cilla doesn't like that. And I'm thinking, oh, no, I can't talk about her in the past. I can't say Cilla wouldn't have liked that. She's still very much part of my life. And for instance, earlier this year when I was in Barbados, there wasn't a single party I went to, and they party every night, that Cilla didn't come up. She touched a lot of people's lives, lots of people's lives. Yeah. She was a fun woman, elegant woman, you know, and a great friend.
I loved her. Well, why I brought her up was the fact that, first of all, that wonderful story you tell about in the Albert Hall when she just wouldn't get off. It was one of my favourite stories that you've ever told. But have you heard about the statue?
No.
Right, I'm going to tell you. Right now, it's all ready to go. On the 16th of January, the statue will be put in Matthew Street, halfway down where the old cavern doorway was, because she used to say, that's not the cavern, that was the cavern. I have been instigating in the getting the artist. Robert and the boys are paying for it and gifting it to Liverpool. And Emma Rogers, along with another gentleman, have created the most beautiful bronze you have ever seen. And it gets launched on the 16th of November. And no one's seen it. And I'm one of the few people. And I'm so excited about it.
Oh, Peter, well, if you like it, then I'm sure I would like it too. My one question is the statue, does the statue have heels?
It has the best shoes she ever had. It's got the skirt and it's got the pre-op nose.
The pre-op nose, okay.
Because she wanted that nose. She didn't want the first nose, she wanted the second nose.
She would never be seen anywhere without those heels.
Not at all.
We did a cruise together, and it was a fairly rough day, but do you think she put on a pair of slippers or something? No. She hobbled about on heels, collapsing everywhere. Oh, no, God bless her.
I'll remind you of how much she really loved you, Cliff. Really, really loved you.
Well, we got on really well, and we got to know each other better, actually, in Barbados. It's a strange place because it's like a melting pot.
Yeah.
And so I became much more, I could call myself a close friend of Silla's, mostly because of the fact that we spent so much time together in Barbados. And I shall miss her dearly, as I know all of Liverpool will.
Yeah. Indeed they will. Well, we've got a Christmas single out, we've got the album out, we've got a tour. Do you ever question your longevity? Can I put it that way?
Yes, I do. I mean, I wake up, no matter where I am, I wake up in the morning and I look out the window, for instance, in Barbados or Portugal or something, and I think, how the hell did I get here? How did I do this? And when I go and see clips of me singing with Marty Wilde or somebody like that on the Old Boy Show, I'm thinking, how did I get started? Marty was so cool, and I looked like a sort of greasy slob. And I'm thinking, yep, I'm a very lucky man, Peter. I have no idea how or why this has happened to me, but I love it, and I've grasped it by the throat. And as long as people want to hear or see me, I'm prepared to do both those things for them.
Cliff, is there any words out there that you could use to thank your fans for the love over the years, but the love through the pain you've gone through?
It's hard. I've put it into words many times, but it's very hard to say. You couldn't say enough, in point of fact. But the love and the support, particularly in the last 2 years, has been so helpful. Even to the point when I looked down my driveway once and I thought, oh, my gate has changed color. And I walked down to it. This was in Portugal. And it was covered in yellow ribbons with beautiful messages. And, I mean, those are only the people that came. I know that I had the warmth of that love throughout that 2 years. And I'll never, ever be able to say thank you enough or thank you in the right and correct way because I don't have the vocabulary, but I'm very grateful to them all.
And to finish off, I've got to say that I also struggle with downloads, etc. But I think for your fans, if you actually sort of said, you download, you get a free bottle of my wine.
Oh, I can't afford it this year. We had a terrible crop. We had a bug that came and ate the fruit. So although we've only got we got fewer bottles, but the grapes that were left were good, fortunately. But what a good idea. I might think of that for the future.
Are you pleased with the album?
Oh, Peter, I'm thrilled with it. I love singing that stuff. It's my zone. I feel comfortable in it. You know, when I listen to it now, I'm thinking, oh, this is where I started, and here I am singing this stuff in a slightly different way, of course, but I just love being in that comfortable area that rock and roll gives me.
Enjoy the tour. Enjoy the Christmas single. Enjoy the album. Just fabulous rock and roll. The single is It's Better to Dream, and I've got the Christmas mix. I'm going to put it on eBay and see if I can flog it then if nobody's got one. So, Cliff Richard, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you for your time. Lots of love to you and lots of love to Liverpool. God bless you all. Bye.